view yourself as a logical, rational person that hardly ever makes decisions based on emotion? Or conversely, do you feel like you're the person who mostly makes decisions on emotions? You feel mostly out of control, like you can't achieve the things that you set out to achieve. In this episode today, we're going to talk about why both of you are incorrect, why we're all a mixture of both this rational and irrational, and how sometimes our irrational may not be as rational as you think, but a representation of what our true priorities are. And most importantly, we're going to get into how you can change your behavior to achieve your goals, especially when it comes to health. What's up, my friend? I'm health expert Ted Rice, and welcome back to the Legendary Life Podcast. I'm a coach to CEOs, executives, and other high-performing professionals. I help them achieve their goals with health, with stress management, with productivity, with getting more out of life. And what this show is about, it's about helping you to lose fat, helping you to prevent disease, and really helping you to live that legendary life that we all want to live, that intentional life, that life where you feel, wow, I feel fulfilled. I'm present in the moment. I'm just loving this moment. That's what this is about. So if you like what you're hearing so far, and if it's your first time listening, make sure you click that subscribe button wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you've been listening for a while and you appreciate what the Legendary Life Podcast brings to your life every week, make sure you leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts, because this isn't just me. We have a whole team that works hard to bring you these episodes every single week. So let's jump into it. What the hell is going on with our behavior? Why can't we do the things that we know we should do? Why can't we eat better? Why can't we lose weight and keep it off? Why can't we exercise the 150 minutes, the minimum of 150 minutes a week? Why can't we find time in our schedule to make that happen? Great questions. And I want to kick this episode off by sharing this with you, sharing something about smoking. Now, you may or may not know this, but in 2009, the U.S. government increased taxes on cigarettes from 39 cents to $1.01. And they did this mostly to fund this state children's health insurance program. But when taxes drove the price of cigarettes up, very interesting, teenage smoking rates fell 10%. It created a barrier where teens just didn't want to spend the extra money. And not only did teens stop smoking, but overall smoking dropped more than 8%. And that may not sound like a lot, but this is the most significant dip in smoking since 1932. And this raising the taxes approach to cigarettes, it's used in all 50 states now. And it's a means of course, generating revenues, right? But also reducing the number of smokers. Now, what are we talking about? Well, this is an example of what we now commonly call behavioral economics. Have you ever heard of that term before? Now, I know you've heard of economics. It's part of our daily lives. But what you may not know is that traditional economics is based on the idea that human beings are rational, at least at a collective level. We buy and sell things at a value that we can justify because it maximizes the utility, right? In other words, we get the best, you know, benefit for, we get the most value for the least amount of money. That's what traditional economics has been based on. But since the 1970s, there was a few people, the pioneering work of Tversky and Kahneman on economics and how people are quite irrational when it comes to buying behavior. And, you know, of course, it's 2020 now, it's like, well, how many pairs of shoes do you have? Like eight? Why do you need that, right? Why do we have a closet full of clothes and most of us, we can't even fit into half of what we have? There's nothing rational about that at all. But in the 70s, it took this pioneering work of these people to challenge these core assumptions. And what they found is people have many shortcuts in the way they see the world. And this bias and this perspective, it influences our are my decision making all the time, and it's anything but rational. And then another guy, based on the work done in the 1970s, Richard Thaler, I think I'm saying his name right, began to look into this idea in more detail, and he created what became to known as nudge theory, or something I've mentioned before, choice architecture. This guy figured out, we're acting quite irrationally, and there's this idea, nudge theory or choice architecture, where it shows exactly how human beings really think, instead of, you know, this old idea that, oh, we're so logical and rational, right? I've had so many conversations, people who are like engineers, accountants, software, like data scientists, people, right? You know who you are. Like, oh, I'm super rational when it comes to that. It's like, no, we're not, right? We're not. I think so many of us realize that, but even the most technical of us, we're still, I mean, come on, why do you come back and listen to this podcast every week? If I had a different vibe to me, even if the information were good, if I had a different vibe of maybe a different tone of voice, you know, you would not be listening to it, right? We do things based on emotion. It's the more dominant, and this has to do with the structure of our brain, right? It's just that the part of our brain, the more ancient part of our brain, is more in control. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this in a bit, but just to understand, hey, listen, this is how we're wired. This isn't, you know, we're lucky if we can be more in that lateral prefrontal cortex. We're lucky if we can do that, where it takes training to do that. But even if we train ourselves, even if we lower stress in our lives, even if we develop that ability to still make good decisions under pressure, we still have these biases that come up. We still have this innate wiring that has an effect on our decision-making. So back to Thaler, who the dude who won the Nobel Prize for Economics in 2017, him and other behavioral economists show that in reality, people make decisions quickly under pressure, based largely on intuition and unconsciously guided by our biases and other things that are called psychological fallacies. And that's an academic way of putting it, but have you ever had an argument with someone about politics or nutrition, like I do, and people just stick to their guns? People aren't interested in changing their views based on better evidence. We look for evidence to confirm what we know, otherwise called confirmation bias. We get into arguments and use straw man fallacies or straw man arguments. We do false equivalencies, right? So we compare apples to oranges just to make a point, make our point, and be right. So what he also found is that if we responsibly use nudges, subtle interventions that guide choices without restricting them, we can help shape our behavior. By developing awareness about our preferences, our tendencies as human beings, we can use that information to make our environments such that it becomes a lot easier to achieve our goals, right? So a few things. Humans prefer simplicity. Why do you read blog posts versus research? It's hard to understand research. I read research all the time, and I'll be the first one to tell you, I'm not great at it. I don't understand the statistics that well. I don't understand the study design that well. But that's what I've forced myself to do, because that is where everyone, including medical doctors, actually get their information from, right? The evidence-based information, the research. Now, of course, there's a clinical side to things. There's an experiential side to things. But if people are talking about science to you, it comes from research and no other place, right? You can't learn the mechanisms by treating patients in your office or coaching them in your coaching practice. You've got to, it all comes from research. So humans prefer simplicity, right? If I say things in a way that are too complicated, you're just going to turn this off. humans also have a limited attention span. I mean, there's a great saying, right? So I'm in the business of putting things out in this podcast. I put posts up on social media. And at first, you start to think that you're competing with other people who are doing the same thing you're doing. And then a business coach came along and said, you know what? You're not really competing with them. You're competing with viral cat videos. That's what people are really watching on the internet, right? Not necessarily my demographic, because I go after high-performing people. I'd hope to think that you're not spending too much of your time watching viral cat videos, but that's an example of that. We all see the limited attention span that the people around us have, and even we have, right, as high performers. We also go out of our way to avoid hassles. I mean, here's one interesting example. People usually choose bananas over oranges because it takes less effort to peel the banana. How crazy is that? Another one is that when employees are automatically opted into a savings plan at their job, they end up saving more money versus if you ask them to opt in. Now, I want you to think about that for a second. If you ask someone, hey, man, do you want to, or woman, hey, woman, do you want to save money? We all want to save money, right? We all know savings is important, right? Saving for a rainy day, saving for retirement, we all know that's important. But if you ask people if they want to have a savings plan that automatically deducts money from their check into the savings plan, they opt out. They don't do it, right? They don't opt out. They don't opt in. But when you automatically say, hey, listen, what we do here is we give you a savings, we set up this savings account for you. It's automatically deducted. And if you don't want it, you have to opt out. By putting this, are you following me? By putting this small barrier, really, to get you to save more money, it works. Now, again, this is collective, not individual, right? But we're talking about it because individual behavior is very hard to predict. But at a collective level, seeing what the majority of people do, we're starting to learn that there's a predictability to it. So let's talk about the underlying principles here. And why is there a need for this idea of choice architecture? Why do we have to set things up for ourselves in a way to make it easier so that we make better decisions? Why can't we just make better decisions? Why can't we just say, hey, you know what? I'm going to eat the orange. It's more effort to peel. And then, you know, it gets all over your fingers and your fingers stink like orange. But, you know, an orange is a better choice. I don't remember even if it has less carbs in it, but it's got more vitamin C, it's got more nutrients, it's got more water in it, it's got more, I'm not sure if it has more fiber, but it's a better choice. Not that there's anything wrong with bananas, but the idea is, you know, if we're not getting the banana, we're not foregoing the orange because we really want the banana. It's just like this thing, we just don't want to peel it, right, and get our fingers dirty. What is at the root of this, right? What is at the root of this contradiction between our rational, theoretical selves, the ones, our ideal selves, right? Oh, I do everything based on logic, right? I just make the best choice based on the maximization of the value that I get. Yeah, why do we do that versus, what is the contradiction there between our rational, theoretical selves and our irrational, actual selves? So some research has looked into this, and it's something that we've talked about before if you've been listening to the show for a while. Have you ever said, I had to drag myself out of bed this morning? I was so tired, I had to drag myself out of bed. It's like, well, who's doing the dragging? Because if it's you, then why don't you just get up and out of bed? Oh, I had to hold my tongue at the meeting. I really wanted to say something, but I knew that I'd get in trouble if I say it. Why did you have to hold your tongue, right? Why don't you just, right? Why did it take effort? Because you achieved it, right? You dragged yourself out of bed. You held your tongue, but it took effort, didn't it? Right? Oh, I had to hold back. I really wanted to let them know how I really felt, but I had to hold back. And sometimes we're not always successful. Sometimes we don't drag ourselves out of bed in the morning. Sometimes we don't hold our tongues and we have to deal with the consequences of it. And we're like, oh man, I really shouldn't have said that. What's going on there? Why is that? Where does this duality originate from? So there is, of course, Cartesian mind-body dualism. So we know that's wrong, right? That there's a mind and then there's the body and it's two separate things. But there is some experience of duality that is true, that is based on what we know from neuroscience and psychological research. So there's two systems running here. We have our hot system, right? Our hot cognition is what I've referred to it as, and our cold cognition. And these are also called system one and system two. They're also called the automatic system and the reflective system. I like hot and cold because I like the metaphors, but just understand that we're talking about the same thing here. So what is the hot? What is hot cognition? What's rapid? It feels instinctive. It's the tongue you had to hold back. There's a part of you that just wanted to say what you felt like you wanted to say. And then your cold cognition had to say, hey, listen, we may not enjoy the consequences if you just kind of let it go and tell people what you really think, right? Also, if you had to duck because a ball is thrown at you, you don't think about, oh, there's a ball coming at my face. I need to move my head. No, you just duck. Or if you are on an airplane like I was recently and we hit some turbulence, you know, you kind of perk up a little bit. The hair on your arm stands up. You get a little jolt of adrenaline, right? You're not thinking about it. The thought comes later. Are you with me on this? Or when you see a cute puppy and you're something about just, oh, I just love puppies. I don't know about you, but I love dogs, right? And especially puppies. There's just something so cute about them. It's an automatic response. You're not thinking, oh, let me analyze the puppy. Let me weigh the cost benefit. You know, let's weigh the pros and cons of this puppy to decide whether it's cute or not. No, you just feel it and you smile. And then you think after it, oh gosh, what a cute puppy. And that's all automatic system, right? Now, that's your automatic system or hot cognition. Now, your cold cognition, it's more deliberate and self-conscious. We use the cold cognition system when we're asked, how much is 37 times 432? I don't know. Even if you're great at math and can do that in your head, it's going to take some effort for you, right? You can't just reflexively answer it. People also use the reflective system or the cold cognition when they're deciding which route to take for a trip or should you go to law school? Should you go to business school? Should you invest in Bitcoin or should you invest in Apple? Should you start a business that, you know, deals with, should you start a tech, should you do a tech startup or should you open a brick and mortar and sell commercial goods, right? You can't just answer it reflexively. Now, maybe with the business examples, if you're highly skilled in business, you already know what you would do. And we'll talk about this in a second because you can train hot cognition, right? So one way to think about the hot cognition is it's your gut reaction and the cold cognition is your conscious thought. So it's important to note here that gut feelings can be quite accurate, but they can also be mistakes, right? We often make mistakes because we rely too much on our automatic system. So here's a good example. I think one that we can all relate to. So let's say you're out on a date with a person and you just get a vibe from them like, this isn't a person I should really, I don't feel the vibe here for whatever reason, right? But on paper, they seem good, right? Maybe you met them like me. I do a lot of online dating or did a lot of online dating. So on paper, it's like, oh, they're this, they have that, they have this education, they have these leanings in politics or whatever it is. They're the same religion, whatever you look for. On paper, they seem good, but in person, you just felt like there was something kind of off. And you still go through with it, right? Let's say you date them and then it takes a little while and you quickly find out, my gut feeling was correct, right? My gut feeling was correct. Shouldn't have done it. Now, on the other hand, what about how we react to, and I like using these examples, these social examples right now, even though this is a health and fitness podcast, because so much stress comes from this. So what about viral videos? What about seeing a video out of context and emotionally reacting to it because you, what you feel like you're seeing is extreme injustice, right? I'm like hesitant to use any examples because I know it'll get someone triggered. But one example was the news, how they covered when there was like a young Trump supporting MAGA hat wearing guy. And then there was this Native American who was playing this drum and he was playing it in the face of the MAGA guy, right? And if you saw that, you're like, what is this kid doing in that older Native American guy's face? That is so disrespectful. What an asshat. Of course, he's a Trump supporter. At least some people will say that. Like, why was he in that guy's face? But the story was, and I could be wrong about this, but this is what I read. I don't read politics very much, but it's an example that I think we can all remember if you kind of pay attention, because if I remember it and I'm not paying attention to politics, you probably remember. But what it was is that guy was up in the kid's face, right? But we react, at least I when I saw it, I was like, man, why is that kid up in the guy's face, right? Why is he in his personal space like that? That's like inappropriate. First, he's younger, the guy's older, and then there's this issue with the Native American thing and this kid being white. Didn't look right. But because we didn't have the whole context, and there's a lot of examples like these, right? And I want to ask you, when you see these things, do you react automatically? Yeah, but we need more information to really put the context together. Right? Are you super triggered? Hopefully not. Because what we're trying to do here is to challenge our biases, to challenge this part of ourself that thinks they know the answer before they get all the details, before they get all the facts. The challenge here is to use the cold cognition to overcome and retrain your hot cognition, because that can happen, right? It takes a lot of repetition though. But it can happen. It's how you went from driving a car or not being able to drive a car to driving a car and talking on the phone and maybe eating all at the same time sometimes, right? If you were like me in my 20s, I would like drive my car with my knee and I'd eat a sandwich and I did it to show off and talk on the phone sometimes, right? Yeah, don't hate me. I was dumb. Yes, I was. Guy in his 20s in Miami. Bit of a douchebag, but that's Miami for you. The influence of culture. So, and that's what we're kind of talking about here too. A lot of us end up certain ways and we don't have the awareness about it until afterwards. So I'll even use that example right now. I started realizing, hey, I'm kind of a douchebag in my 20s. And I said, well, how did this happen? Because I didn't consciously, I'm a good-hearted person. I didn't consciously say, hey, listen, you know what I'm going to be? I'm going to be a douchebag. I'm going to be a bit douchey. Now, I wasn't a total douchebag. Don't take me wrong, but I was a bit douchey. And I didn't understand, right? I just didn't know. I didn't have awareness. I also, in Miami, it's pretty common behavior. If you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. So once I started understanding, hey, listen, I don't really like the way I'm behaving. I don't think it's the right way to behave. I also know that it's not getting me the results that I want. It's not, I'm not meeting friends. I'm not making friends like I want to. I'm not meeting women like I want to. I'm not having this success with my personal training clients like I want to. So I needed to change. And so I was able to do it. And so this is how, I think this is a good example, actually. We have, let's say that your personality, right, is your hot cognition. The way you react to things, it's your hot cognition. One thing that happens and I'll make it relevant to you and to actually to what I've dealt with clients like it's interesting. Now, I'm not currently really taking clients on, right? But I was trying to take a lot of clients on at one point, and I would do a lot of those breakthrough calls. And it was so fascinating that people, okay, do you want to change? Yes, I want to change. How much do you want to change? Oh, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm an 11. I want to change. And I'd say, okay, great. Well, I can guarantee you success in this program. I've qualified you. The fact that you've been on a bunch of diets is actually a plus, not a minus. It means that you already have knowledge and experience. It also takes, as we've seen, it takes several times of going through the stages of change to really break through and make a transformation. Probably unlikely for someone who's overweight and, okay, this is my first time around, to be super successful, although it could happen, takes many times. So you're a perfect candidate for my coaching. And then, of course, I drop the price. So what happens? People forget their dreams, why they want to achieve weight loss, why they want to, you know, what the benefits will be after they lose fat and all the other things, right? Because they came to me and I don't come to people. I don't say, hey, man, you look a little overweight. You want some coaching? I don't do that. I don't reach out to people. I put things in place so people reach out to me and I make it hard to work with me. Okay, I do that on purpose because everyone, it's like, hey man, do you want to make seven figures a year? Oh yeah. Okay, well great. It takes working 100 hours a week. Oh, never mind then. Right? It's like it takes work to transform your body. And when most people, you know, hear that, they go away. I put all these barriers, but even with all the barriers, even making it hard to work with me and everything, people will come to the end. And when it comes to exchanging money to get into my program, and we're not talking about people who don't have the money here, right? We're talking about people who could afford it, but they start wanting to back out. And what I say is, listen, you want to back out right now. And I understand that. But where you are in your life and where you are with your health is the sum total of the choices that you've been making, of the decisions that you've been making. And right now, the fact that you want to say no to this when you've been listening to the podcast for a year, when you're tired, sick and tired of being overweight, where you can't fit into half the clothes in your closet, where you're desperate to make a change, you can afford this. You said you had the money, even though you don't want to, nobody wants to spend the money for coaching, right? It's just, you know, it's like everybody just wants to, well, just buy some new clothes or new car or something, you know? Right. So anyway, but you said you want to do this and this, no, this is part of your reflexive system. It's part of your hot cognition. It's part of what's keeping you stuck. And then we see if people are really committed to change or not. Because my goal isn't to get someone to sign up with me on one of those calls. Obviously, that's a benefit for me. I'll make money. I'll get to improve my coaching skills by working with another person. And obviously it's a great benefit for them. They learn a ton of stuff. It's like getting a master's degree in fat loss. And they lose in between 20 and 30 pounds on average in 3 months. So it's pretty good. But my goal is to make them to incentivize them, to nudge them to make a decision. Because you know what a lot of people want to say? They want to say, well, I want to think about it. It's like, well, you can, but yeah, there's going to be consequences to that. I'm here to take action now. Do you want to do it? Yes or no? Right? So it's very interesting because we all want to make changes, but we're highly resistant. I want to tell you a quick story too about myself because I do these things. I really lock people into the program. And I don't do that to be a dick or to be rude or to be mean or to be hard on people. I just do it because I understand human behavior. It's one of the reasons why I don't do like a big group thing for a cheap price, like a couple $100 or something like that. It's because people don't follow through with it because they don't care about losing a couple. People don't care about losing a couple $100. You say you care, but you don't really care because people disappear out of the program. Used to happen when we ran our other coaching programs. You know, the first coaching program we started, we charged 500, was it 500 bucks for 3 months, right? Which is a hell of a deal. And we dropped the price a little bit and we had less people sign up. Now my price is multiples of 500. And I have a lot of people wanting to sign, and I put more barriers up. I make it hard, right? Because I understand human psychology. And I've even been in this situation. I've signed up to things. I said I wanted to do things. One person in particular who I wanted to do this 3-day intensive with, but they didn't get me to sign up. They didn't get me to pay money. And I changed my mind and I walked away. And so they didn't get the money and I didn't get the result that I wanted. Because I would have been, it was a bit expensive. It was $4,000 to do this psychological intensive treatment. But I really wanted to do it because it was after my dad died. I had the money to do it. But because she didn't get me to commit to it, I walked away. She didn't get paid, although she's got a waiting list. But I didn't get the help I needed. So we need to, this is why I do some of the things. If you've ever been on one of those breakthrough calls and you're like, wow, man, this dude is really putting the pressure on me. That's why I do it. Because we're all kind of full of crap, right? We all have this hot cognition. We talk ourselves out of things that we really want to do and or need to, maybe not even want to do, but need to do. I need to do this for myself. But if you give me an out, I'm going to take it. I mean, does that resonate with you? This is what's going on with people. And this behavioral economics thing. Now, we talked about how people are irrational, but there's actually another theory. It's called the jobs theory. And there's no need for you to memorize this or anything. But so jobs theory explains that everything people consciously choose to do, including doing nothing, by the way, that's a choice, they do to make progress according to their own priorities. In a particular set of circumstances, we call this progress, or they call this progress, a job. And it motivates individuals to search for a solution. And based on this insight, the theory asserts that the way to help people unleash their potential to better manage their health is not to try to get them to prioritize health goals over the jobs they're already striving to do, which is what we try to do. Hey, listen. You know, you getting your kids to school is on time is important, but hey, what about your health, right? So that's what we kind of do in society and in the fitness industry. We beat you over the head. But what you're doing is you're saying, hey, listen, I care about my kids. I need to get them to school on time. I take them to basketball practice. I take them to dance practice. I take them to whatever practice. Like, my kids are important. Also, I've got to work, right? So that's important too. So instead of beating people over the head and finger wagging and saying, hey, prioritize your health, people already have their priorities. People really do care about health. Do you resonate with that? You probably do if you've been struggling to change. But if you're a person who's already prioritized your health, you probably don't recognize the challenges that people have. So what's the better way then? Instead, it's to understand those jobs and to help people accomplish them in ways that enhance their health rather than detract from it. For example, let's say that someone's feeling lonely, right? There's a number of things that they could do, right? We know loneliness is not just a psychological feeling, but it drives up inflammation in your body and leads to a life that is shorter, okay? Lonely people die sooner. It's one of the untalked about, everyone's like, oh, the telomeres and the oxidative stress theory of aging. Yeah, being lonely is not a complicated biological theory of aging, right? Can't take a pill for it, but it's a big deal. So let's say a person's, especially in this time where there's so many lockdowns, someone's striving to feel less lonely. What they might do is they might get a pet, like a cat or a dog. They might join a walking group, because even if you're locked down, it's not super locked down, right? You can still go out and walk in your neighborhood, hopefully. They could also get on Instagram or Facebook and spend more time there and communicate with people there. Or they see that they've got some colleagues at work if you're back in your offices and they all take breaks to smoke cigarettes. And you could say, oh, well, you know, I'm not a smoker, but I want to make more friends and everybody seems to smoke here. So I'm going to start smoking so I can go take a smoke break with my colleagues, right? I'm just giving examples. So each one of these solutions has a health consequence, ranging from positive to negative, especially the smoking one. It's the number one thing. The worst thing you can do for yourself is to get older, but we can't do anything about that. But the second most important thing you can ever do for your health is to not smoke cigarettes. And remains to be seen if weed falls into that, right? If marijuana falls into that. But cigarettes, it's the worst thing you can do for your health. So the jobs theory provides a framework for creating solutions for people that also have positive health consequences, right? So, but there needs to be an approach to do this. So here's some things. If you're looking to change, now we're getting into what's important. So number one, you got to take into account a person's full capacity to change. So you got to take into account your full capacity to change. For example, if you remember the stages of change model, the trans-theoretical model, are you in pre-contemplation or contemplation or preparation or action or maintenance or relapse? And on a scale 1 to 10, how motivated are you to achieve your goal? Now, that could be health-related. It could be for any goal. We'll stick with health because that's what we mostly talk about here. But let's say your goal is to lose, you know, 20 pounds. On a scale 1 to 10, how motivated are you? And why did you choose that number? If you chose an 8, why wasn't it a 7 or a 6? What makes it an 8 for you? If you, and also understanding where you are on the stages of change model, are you in contemplation? Because a lot of that's the, I'm thinking about changing. I'm thinking about it real hard, but not quite ready to prepare or even to take action. So when people come to me on those breakthrough calls, I know you probably think, oh man, if I sign up to that call, like, Ted's just going to try to get me to sign up so he can get paid. No, I don't do that. You want to know why? Because it doesn't fucking work, right? It just creates a lot of hassle for you and me. So what I do is try to figure out, okay, where is this person? They're not in pre-contemplation because they wouldn't have even called me. Although I could make the argument that a few people I can't. So they were thinking about it. But are they in that contemplation phase? Are they in the preparation phase? Some people are actually in the action phase. Hey, listen, I'm doing everything right now and it's not working for me. I'm working out. I'm, eating low carb, doing keto. It's not working for me. That's the action phase. Some people are like in the preparation phase. Hey, I haven't really started doing anything yet. But I'm looking around. I've been listening to podcasts. I listen to your podcast, Ted. And then the contemplation phase. So a lot of people who are in that phase, they'll show up and they're like, hey, well, I just want some more information. I'm just kind of thinking about it. So I don't spend a lot of time with people who are there, right? I really want people who are in that preparation phase or action phase, or maybe even in the relapse phase or something like that. But I stay away from people who I don't think have the necessary level of motivation to change. So you got to ask yourself, how motivated are you to change? Where are you on the stages of change? And on a scale 1 to 10, where are you? And honestly, right? Also, works with an individual's existing beliefs about health. So here, you know, a lot of people wonder what I do with clients nutrition-wise. Like, hey, are there, one of the most common questions I've ever gotten from coaching is like, hey, what are the special foods that I need to eat? And it always blows people away. Listen, there are no special foods. We're going to try to work with what your diet is like now, and we're going to try to change it as little as possible unless you say that you want to change it. Now, I do give people some things like, I get people to eat more protein. I get them, but I get people to find their own solutions because you can't force people to change. They've got to want to change, and you got to work with people with their existing beliefs. So if someone says, no, I look at a carb and it makes me fat, I don't say, shut up. That's stupid. You're going to start eating sweet potatoes and bananas and grapes. You're going to have a high carb diet now because that's not going to work. So what I do is, no problem. We'll start with low carb, and then we'll go from there. Three, you need to address the broader factors that determine health. So if someone is a CEO and they're super duper busy, that's going to be a bit different than someone who is the wife of a CEO or, someone who is a stay-at-home dad, just to not piss anybody off. By the way, my cousin is a stay-at-home dad and his wife is bringing in the bank. And anyway, sorry, I can't help myself in this new environment we're in, right? That's evolved over the past couple of years. So anyway, the broader factors that determine health. What's a person's stress level? What type of crises that are going on? I was working with the vice president of operations for a hospital. She had different, in the middle of a COVID crisis, right? In this crisis, she had very different stresses compared to some of my other executive clients, right? So we have to factor in someone's lifestyle or career, right? And look at the way they determine health. Number four, we have to isolate a person's real obstacle to healthy behavior. So what is it that's really stopping you? Is it a belief? I don't believe I can lose weight. Is it that you're trying to force yourself to go to the gym, but the gym's 30 minutes away and you're tired, right? And you don't have a lot of time. You've got a career, you've got kids. And so many of my clients, when I've got them to work out at home, they're like, oh, I love this. I just knock out my workout, especially with all the gym closures. I had one client, he's lost 40 pounds with me. And he was going to the gym to do cardio. And I told him, Nick, why don't you, he's been on this show before. It's like, man, invest in an elliptical, get it at home. And he eventually did it. And you know what? He's been crushing it ever since because the obstacle that he was having is time. And also the gym schedule was a bit wonky because of the whole COVID thing. But once he got the elliptical in his house, he's on fire now. And also five, we have to shift the measurement, the goal from outcome to progress, right? So a person might want to lose 50 pounds, but we can't guarantee that's going to happen. Well, that's not going to happen in 3 months. It could happen, but you'd have to be on a super strict diet to make that happen. I have a friend who lost 50 pounds. I just talked with him recently while I was catching up with everybody. And he gained 20 of them back because he was on this vegan diet, right? And then he went off the vegan diet during the holidays, gained 20 pounds. And he lost 50 pounds in 90 days, but gained 20 of them back. Still pretty good, by the way. But that's an example of the obstacles that we're talking about. We need to look at progress. And now if he said to himself, oh man, I'm a failure. I gained 20 pounds back, right? That's over a third. It's nearly half. I'm a loser. No, he's still 30 pounds down. He's got to think to himself, hey, and I had a talk with him. So he's got the right mindset, but it's the progress that we need to focus on. Don't be so outcome driven. Now it's good to have an outcome goal. I want to lose 50 pounds. I want to lose 70 pounds. I want to lose 100 pounds. I want to lose 20 pounds. For me, I want to see my abs. I don't care about the weight as much. I want to see the vein on my ab, right? That I've talked about in the past. That's my outcome. However, if I focus on that, how long will it be where I'm like, oh man, the vein's not showing. My abs don't, I don't look ripped. The vein's not showing. The abs, how many days can I go through that not having the outcome before it starts to wear me down? We got to shift that focus on the progress. So this is how we start to work with ourselves instead of against ourselves. And just to kind of recap that there, you got to take into account. Now, I've told a lot of stories from my coaching business and some from my friends, but I want you to think about how this applies to you, right? Especially if you're not in the situation where you're considering working with anybody. Number one, you've got to take into account your full capacity to change. Where are you in the cycle? Are you just kind of thinking about it, or are you, you know, you're trying different things? Or did you lose weight, but you fell off and you're looking to get back in the game? And on a scale 1 to 10, how ready are you to make that happen? Number two, you've got to work with your individuals, with your existing beliefs about health, right? If you think that carbs make you fat, or that saturated fat or high fat diet causes heart disease and you've got a history of heart disease, do what works with your existing beliefs, right? Don't try to challenge them too much. Challenge them eventually, but don't try to challenge them while you're trying to make behavior changes. Do you see the nuance there? Number three, address the broader factors that influence your health. What are your stress levels? How are you sleeping? What are the demands at work? What are the demands in your family? How does that all fit together? What is actually doable for you considering all those things? Also, isolate your real obstacle to healthy behavior. Saying, well, I'm not motivated, isn't really isolating it, right? What has you unmotivated? Is it because you constantly watch negative news and politics and you get so depressed that you feel like, oh, I don't want to do anything? The world's going to hell in a handbasket. So then the real issue is not your motivation, it's the fact that you constantly are stressed because you're choosing or perhaps addicted to negative news, and you need to change that behavior so that you can focus on the other ones, right? Because if we don't, I can give you the best program in the world and you're following it, but then you get back and then you read some news about coronavirus statistics spiking or the different variants and the, you know, people rioting in the Capitol or whatever, or Biden's programs, and that irritates you. And then all of a sudden, boom, you got to isolate the real obstacle to achieving better, healthy behavior, better behavior for you. And then again, number five is shift from outcome focused to progress focused, right? Progress focused, and progress and process. It's not about how much weight you lose. It's about how many days do you stay on track with your eating, right? My clients, how many days do you hit your calorie? How many weeks really do you hit your calorie allotment? How close are you to the amount of protein you should be eating? How many times did you go to the gym over the past month, right? Progress and process over outcome. And if you focus on that, you'll get the outcome eventually. It may not come as fast as you want, but you will get it. So that's it for today. I know we've had a bit of a long conversation here on behavior change, but I'm trying to do my best to break these down. A lot of this comes from research in, you know, psychology and also behavioral economics. I'm trying to help you understand yourself better, understand the forces that influence you better so that you can achieve your goals. Because to be superhuman, to perform superhuman, you have to first already realize that you're only human, right? And you've got to work within the constraints. I love this example. Someone was arguing with me because I said, biology trumps psychology. And someone on Facebook, of course, was arguing with me about this and said, well, Ted believes that, so it makes it true for him. But really, you can overcome anything with the right mindset. I was like, really? Challenge accepted. Okay, here's what I want you to do. Are you ready? You're going to hold your breath. And in fact, let's not hold your breath. Let's lock you in it and suck all the air out. Let's lock you in a vacuum room, suck all the air out. And what I want you to do, I want you to meditate or think happy thoughts or listen to Tony Robbins, right? Whatever psychological tactic that you have, all of them if you want. And let's see. And I want you to go without air, right? Of course, there is nothing that can help you go without air, right? There is no psychological tactic. There's no guru. There's no supplement. There's no nothing. You need air. You need food. You will starve to death if you don't eat, right? There's certain parameters. So you can't drive your car and never change the oil. It's going to break down, right? You can do it, but it's going to break down, okay? So by understanding the rules of the human body, now I used kind of some extreme ones, but going without air, for example, but there are other ones that are at play here, right? And once you start to understand how you're only human and what really makes you thrive, then you start performing like you're superhuman. And people are like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, you have great genetics. Oh, how did you lose so much weight in your 40 in your 40s? You must not eat any carbs. You must not eat at all. You must never have dessert. You must never drink alcohol, right? All untrue. So that's what I want to leave you with. And I want to ask you, what is your big takeaway from today's episode? What did you learn about your behavior? What did you learn about how to achieve your goals better? And then taking that nugget, what can you apply right away within the next 5 minutes, within the next hour? Because that's what we really need here is less information, more taking action on information. All right. That's the thought I want to leave you with. Love you. Have an amazing week and speak to you on Friday.